You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Tennis.com podcast. We're back in New York. Welcoming back Steve Tigner. Richard Pagliaro comes down to Steve made it from across the world. Richard and I made it from the ice and the other remnants from polar vortexes and such. So kind of a good job everybody getting here. How was Australia?
Australia was great. The weather was great. I was glad not to be
It was good?
Here. Yeah, well, really? It was hot the first week, but otherwise it was good. And the tournament was good.
Yeah.
You know, it really got better at the end. And, you know, I thought it was one of the better tournaments I've been to down there.
And how are you liking the weather back here?
I don't know. I need to find a tournament in February, I think, to go to somewhere. Maybe Rio.
Cleveland?
Rio for a month. Maybe. No, not Cleveland.
Not Cleveland. Yeah, it's true. Rio gets on the schedule this year, and a couple other tournaments get a facelift too. Like Acapulco goes clay to hard. February has kind of been shifting a little bit over, you know, from years past. I think it gets a name as a very slow month of tennis, but there actually is a lot going on. You know, whether it's really of great value, you know, that we're going to look in 10 months from now and remember it. Yeah, I don't think you want to go that far.
I think a lot of it will have to do with whether Nadal goes to Buenos Aires. He's supposed to play Buenos Aires in Rio, and he's sort of the reason I think that people are thinking this South American tour can become bigger. He played it last year, but it's still a little unclear whether he's going to go to Buenos Aires. I think his back is okay, but he hasn't completely decided.
And especially if down the road, you know, an event like Rio does pick up, it's a 500 event. If that does tend to generate, you know, interest, I think beyond the typical entrance you'd see down in South America, you know, it has had that Latin golden clay swing for a while, but that really has been limited to just the, you know, the typical dirt ballers that we see there. And you can feel kind of a little bit of a change bubbling, you know, amongst this month there. The other tournaments of note are going to be in the Middle East. That's for WTA Doha and Dubai. Doha precedes Dubai.
Doha's first.
Yeah, and that's a loaded field every year. You know, obviously there's a lot of money being thrown around there. We're going to see Serena back at that, among others there.
Yeah, we have Serena. Azarenka has pulled out, but Serena, Lina, Radwanska, most of the other big names, Sharapova's not in it. But really, that's the first tournament where you see some of the Australian Open, some of the storylines there start to play out. And it doesn't get a lot of media attention in the West, unfortunately. We sort of focus on Indian Wells next, but you know, Doha and Dubai, because of the amount of money that's there, they get full draws, and the draws aren't big, so there's a lot of good matches right from the start.
That's true, yeah. Some of these are as small as 32-player draws. I mean, Richard, do you, for these tournaments, and there is a men's one too, of course, in Dubai, where Djokovic, he's the two-time defending champion there, they get just as stacked of fields for that event. You know, as Steve said, these rosters are as good as Masters events in many cases. So, but do you really value, I guess what I'm trying to say is about this whole month and these tournaments, do you value them as really good barometers of where players are at, or is it more kind of still like a money grab event to you?
I think there's an element of money grabbing in it, but when, as you guys just said, when you have that kind of depth in the field, I think it's really important. Also, psychologically, remember the year Murray went to Australia, got to the final, lost, and he was just in this malaise for like 2 months. You see how players respond to, you know, if they had an early loss in Melbourne or if they went deep. You know, I think it's just a good indication of the desire and psychologically how they can sort of bounce back from that first major, especially because the conditions are so brutal the first week.
I mean, how do you guys expect Rafa to bounce back from Australia? We just brought up his name, and it was, you know, obviously from watching that final, it was, you know, as clear a day as this was not a good injury. Backs in tennis, that's never a good thing, of course. And, you know, as I think we've written about, if it wasn't the knees or the hand, it was out of nowhere this back came there. But Rafa is still, you know, tentatively scheduled to play in a clay event, you know, in South America. I mean, what do you see from him this month?
Well, last year, this was the time of year where he really got back into it. He got his confidence back. He won a couple tournaments down there. after he'd been out for 6 months. The only thing I don't like to hear from him right now is he says he's having trouble getting over the loss to Wawrinka mentally. You know, he said he's even admitted that, you know, usually I don't have that much trouble getting over losses because, you know, but this one was Australian Open final. He was a heavy favorite and never even lost a set to Wawrinka. He loses that. He sort of seems like right now he's having a little trouble just putting that behind him. Maybe he needs to play a couple tournaments, but with, I feel like with Rafa, he has good runs and then he'll have sort of mediocre runs in his career. And he's just come off obviously a great run last year. Maybe he's had trouble sustaining that for two straight years ever. Maybe, you know, maybe this is a point when he won't do as well for a while. I could see that happening.
Well, I think to me with Rafa referring to that match, I think it's almost as big an example of really this opportunity that he lets slip away. That is, you know, it's gone forever. This is an Australian Open tournament that he has had difficulty with in the past. He's, you know, only quote unquote had one title there. I think many of us had our stories kind of written after that Federer match with Rafa, and I think for good reason. There was almost no, you know, logical way to back Wawrinka in that match, and you see how it turned out, and I do think back to where, you know, maybe you think about how when Federer played Del Potro in the Open there, and Federer did have control of that match. This is obviously under different circumstances, one injury based, and these are opportunities that just don't come around again, and you know, Grand Slam titles are of course hard to win as they can be on their own there. So I think Rafa perhaps has that, you know, still in the mind there, and we have to see where he comes back physically too. You know, that's on the men's side there. You know, the women's side, we just mentioned Azarenka, you know, taken, you know, with two tournaments off here with an injury, and she went out in Australia in a very poor way too. You know, in playing and losing so badly the third set to Radwanska. You know, maybe after the first couple of times we've seen her this year, I mean, what do we think of her, you know, really going forward? She is still number two. Maybe, certainly not a convincing one probably at this point, and Lina is only a couple points away from overtaking her, actually.
I would say based on current form, you have to put Lina ahead of her, although the rankings say otherwise. I was a little surprised with Azarenka that she wasn't able to sort of reset at any point during that Radwanska match, where it was sort of the younger, she sort of reverted back to her younger self, where it would be injuries or she would just get a little bit down on herself and it all kind of snowballed on her, whereas we've seen her in the last few years where she's able to shake off a poor set or a five game swing and come back, break right back. That was a little disturbing to me, that she wasn't able to sort of reset, and also that she's worked so hard moving forward, where she just botched a lot of pretty makeable shots, I thought, stepping into the court, and that's something she had really felt added and refined to her game. So, I mean, I think she'll be fine in the long run, but right now the confidence can't be great right now.
It's also not a great start for her because she always starts so fast. She won the last two Australian Opens. She won the last two in Doha, and she's not going to have any of that coming in.
Right, and she's not a clay. She doesn't like the clay as much, so she usually built, especially in the Mid-East, she's done well. So that's, it'll be interesting, maybe almost put more pressure on her going into Indian Wells, Miami, you know.
What do we think about Lee also in you know, this month? I she is going to be in Doha, is that correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I wonder if this is really shaping up as a very good year for her, that you know, I don't think we've talked too much about where Wawrinka and Lee, for example, can make this as more than just the Australian Open for them in this 2014 season. And you know, it's going to be extremely hard for Wawrinka to duplicate a feat like that at a major, just such a colossal achievement. You know, Lee, that's a different case, I think, in her. She really, I think, only has to get around Serena in a way, whether, you know, it's by her own doing or, you know, as we've seen, Serena can, you know, go down, of course. She's not invincible, obviously. You know, Lee has won the French Open, of course. We obviously know she's a good great hard court player. I mean, this could really, you know, I think the sky is kind of the limit for her after what we've seen, and I think winning that tournament in particular, you know, after having two final round kind of slip-ups there after leading, I think that speaks very highly for what we could see Lee do, perhaps along the lines of what Serena was doing, you know, the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think the upside is that it's not just a fluke one-off win for her. She's been good for the last 6 months, you know, really consistently. She was never consistent in the past, but I think working with Carlos Rodriguez, she's really, you know, she was really a consistent player for the second half of 2013 for the first time, and this was sort of the capstone to that. The caution is she didn't beat anybody in the top 20 in the Australian Open. She didn't beat any of the players really around her. She obviously didn't beat Serena, so she still has to prove that. She also was
5 inches away from
she was also there. A down a match point,
yeah,
in the first week, so there's all of that to consider, and she's 31, going to be 32 pretty soon, but I think she'll react to this Grand Slam win better than the last time. In 2011 she won the French Open. She barely won anything the rest of the year, so I, you know, we'll see what happens in this big tournament for her in Doha to see whether she can back that win up right away.
Good way to bring it back to that, yeah. The other events going on this month is a Fed Cup, which takes place this weekend. This is another tournament that's pretty riddled with, you know, no tournament is riddled with pullouts like Fed Cup is and has been. If you remember last year in the final, Russia could barely field a competitive team, and that's the final. The first round is, you know, sort of a lot of the same with that. You have, you know, Kvitova's out of it. If you take a look at the U.S.-Italy tie that's going to take place this weekend, both of those teams are a shell of what they could be. Even, you know, you're not seeing Serena Sloan, but you're also not even seeing a Ronnie Vinci. And these are the defending champion teams I'm referring to, Italy, Czech Republic in previous years here. You said Sloan had a pretty nice remark about the Rock and Roll City in Australia.
Yeah, I guess she's not a Cleveland Browns fan, I guess. <It's not
laughs> What, you know, she basically said that February in Cleveland doesn't interest her too much.
You can understand some of the players, you know, right after Australia, that making that sort of commitment, but it is like when you look at Russia and Meskina is the name that jumps out on you, and she's the captain. You know, it's kind of depressing. It's kind of sad.
I don't think it would have jumped out at me even when she was playing, let alone.
I think it has a lot to do with the schedule too.
Yeah, the schedule is.
The Davis Cup they went a couple years ago went to a schedule where they had the tournament. They had the rounds immediately after the Grand Slams. It was, you know, the next weekend, and that was sort of. I think they shied away from that in the past because they didn't think players would want to come out of a Grand Slam and go straight to Davis Cup, but they decided to try it because they thought that might be better than waiting the way that actually worked out not as well to wait because the schedule got into conflicts with other tournaments. And I think that's what you have with Fed Cup. One thing you have with Fed Cup this week is it's a big conflict with Doha coming up right after it, you know, to go from Australian Open to Fed Cup to Doha, pretty much only Radwanska is doing that I know of, and she'll play anything. But I think that maybe Fed Cup needs to think about what the Davis Cup did.
Yeah, and you know, for Doha, it's players that could be stationed anywhere in the globe. You know, having to make a flight, you know, to obviously thousands of miles away potentially. You know, for that. One other ITF note this week is on the heels of Switzerland winning their Davis Cup tie. Of course, with Federer, you had the announcement from him that he indeed is going to play in the quarterfinal round, and you can only assume that means the rest of the tournament. So Switzerland, you know, they win 3-0, as you would certainly think they would with Federer, Vrinka, and playing a Serbian team that didn't have Djokovic or didn't have anybody else of great competition against them. And things are, you know, this is a story that we were here last week, and it was a total surprise to me when Federer said he was going to play. And then about 5 minutes later, it was like, oh, they have to be the conclusive favorites in this entire tournament here. And they're going to get a relatively easy next match at home against Kazakhstan. They, and you know, from that point on, it really doesn't matter where they play or who they play. They're going to be the favorites anywhere if those two are healthy. You know, what do you, think about all this, this development here? This certainly is as little as I think we're going to be talking about Fed Cup. We're going to be potentially talking a lot more about Davis Cup, especially if, as assuming Switzerland goes on and stays in the semifinal round, give a lot of life to the post-U.S. Open stretch of events.
Yeah, I think it was a surprise that Federer did it, but it makes total sense. He wasn't playing Rotterdam. This was a real opportunity for them to win. They were playing Serbia without Djokovic or Tipsarevic or Troitsky, so it was a real, that was a very, it was a good tie to jump in on. I think one thing that's interesting, in the past maybe 5 years, we've seen a lot of Djokovic and Nadal in Davis Cup. This year, for the first time in a long time, we'll see Murray and Federer. Murray now goes with Great Britain to play Italy in Italy, which is a tough tie. But if they win and Switzerland wins, they would play in Great Britain in the semifinals. That would be in that, that would be definitely a big tie to talk about. That would be, in the summer. But I think, I think you're right. Switzerland with Federer and Wawrinka, they have to be the favorites. The two-time defending champs are the Czechs, and they would be a tough team. Federer and Wawrinka would still be the favorites over them, but Berdych is, for the Czechs, is talking about not playing as much. So,
and if he doesn't play against Japan, that's almost a toss-up, I would say, because they're going to Japan.
Yeah,
That is actually not an easy. The other half of the draw is pretty interesting. You have Czechs against Japan. You also have Germany playing
France.
Germany ends up sweeping, also a very depleted Spain squad there. Somebody actually made a good point about Germany. The top to bottom, their team is pretty solid, actually, with a lot of the players they have. But they, France is, with Monfils is like a three on their team. That really, I think, is what a lot of people are looking at, is down the road, is you may see Federer and Wawrinka end up going to France for, a potential final there. Murray's, that's another, a good one to bring up there. And we covered the U.S.-Britain tie pretty extensively over the weekend, Rich. And for Murray, that was, a fantastic win for him on that fourth day over Query there. As part of the epilogue for the U.S. there, I mean, I think either, regardless of the fact that Isner did not show up there, I thought this was a pretty low point for the U.S. team as a whole. He had Query going down and really just in flames against James Ward on the first day. Donald Young was certainly overmatched against Murray early on, but I think this has to be considered a pretty disappointing, position for the U.S. to be in, losing at home. And I think by now they would have expected this team. This is the post Roddick and Blake team, with the Bryans as the constant, to kind of really have their own, have their own way. And this just did not come together in San Diego whatsoever. Clay, of course, being an interesting service choice, but I don't think that was the issue there. Any thoughts on kind of where they go?
Sad. It was sad to see Query, because I felt like that three-hour match was almost a microcosm of his career, where he shows you he's up 5-0 at 5-1 after 17 minutes. He shows you he can be dominant for stretches. He can sort of get himself into trouble in tie breaks, and then he showed you in five sets why he has such a poor record. So it was sad to see it, and also from an enthusiasm standpoint, I wasn't there, but watching it, it just seemed like the bench wasn't helping him. He's a tough guy to engage with, because he's not like a Roddick or Agassi or McEnroe, who are Davis Cup stalwarts, where they really fire up the crowd and feed off that. That's not his way, and you can't ask him to change his personality. But the time where he really could have used the boost, I felt like he wasn't getting it. But ultimately it's on his shoulders. When you serve that big and you get broken five times in a row, you have no business winning the match. It was just sad to see a guy just completely, because he gave so much to that point. And it's just, like for him to win a five, it's sort of a perverse thing to, for him to get the confidence that he can get across the line in five sets. He's got to win one of these close ones. And I remember the Wimbledon loss to Cilic like 17-15. He lost a five-setter to Wawrinka at the Open where he
Blake
gets,
for a while had a terrible
yeah, exactly. And he gets to the edge. And then, I mean, but I just felt this time around, once it got to the fifth, I felt he had almost no shot. I mean, as sad as that sounds, it just felt he just looked beaten. You know, mm-hmm. and it was sad. It was tough to watch because he's a good guy. He works hard. He just couldn't seal it. With Donald Young, I mean, I can't – not that you give him a pass, but I really didn't expect him to win a set in that match. And for me, it's a similar issue with him where he leaves the backhand short, and so they pound the backhand. And then when he gets the forehand, he'll start overplaying it because he feels, I really got to do something now on the forehand. And it was just
Murray's the kind of the worst.
Yeah,
guy
and Murray's the worst guy. Even I know he's beaten him at Indian Wells. It's a bad matchup for him. You know, you'd like to see them sort of build, but who do you choose to build on, and where do you go?
That's really where
from
I
here. I mean, if I'm Courier, I'm thinking, hey, it's wide open every tie. Whoever's playing well, that's the guy I'm going with, because none of these guys have really shown you for the long haul that they can be a foundation. I mean, Isner, when he's healthy, he's had some huge wins. And the clay, I don't think, was a wise decision, and people bring up Freiberg, but you had elevation in Freiberg where you had the altitude helping the big servers, and you don't get that here. So now you're asking Query to construct points on clay in the fifth set with the pressure. It's just not a good recipe for him.
Well, that's sort of a
I mean,
a
I you know, not, yeah, I don't mean to
tell
be,
me how you,
you
really
know,
feel.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, it was just – I do feel bad for them. I really do. I really
and
do.
And now the U.S. has to go to relegation, too.
Right.
They're out of
right.
The
now, what if they have to go to Argentina or somewhere
or
like
they,
Spain?
Or to play Djokovic or Rafa
right.
be called to play on – you know, that's – a lot of people mentioned that there's going to be a glut of, you know, traditional powerhouse nations
right.
playing that round.
And you could bet red clay might be in their immediate future, too, you know, on an if it's an opposing country. So it's tough. It was tough to see. It was nice to see the Bryans sort of inject some life there, but you know, it's one match.
Yep. I think letdown for them, letdown Super Bowl the following day, letdown weekend, I think, for the US all around.
Although Murray, you know, I have to say, watching him, he's a really good doubles player. I would give him if they get through Italy, I'd love to see them up against Switzerland, because he's dangerous. And even though he doesn't play a lot of doubles, he's really tough in doubles.
He didn't play doubles. Neither did Federer and Wawrinka, actually,
right,
which
right.
I thought was a mild surprise.
But you have to think you'd see all those guys on the double if that ever came off, that semi. You'd have to think they'd all be playing.
And mm-hmm. I think this was a good weekend for Murray, the opposite direction of the U.S. He came out of Australia. He wasn't very happy after the loss to Federer. He obviously didn't like losing to Federer in the quarters, but he wasn't happy about his back. He seemed pretty unsure. I could have sworn for a second he was going to, in the press conference, he was going to say he was pulling out of Davis Cup. I think he was really thinking about it, but he didn't. And it's good because I feel like this weekend was a big confidence builder for him to play, you know, to play some pretty tough clay court tennis, physical tennis,
right.
and to get through it. I think that's a little bit of a turnaround for him.
He made a good point after the Query match. He said that was one of the tougher matches he's played in a while. He said that. The first two sets were neck and neck, and he said what he did in the third was just try to take a little pace off on the serve to Query's backhand, make him generate his own pace, and I thought that's exactly what Ward did the first match at the end, just three-quarter serves, kicking him into his backhand, let him try to create something, and he struggles to do that on the backhand. Yeah.
Very good. Potpourri podcast. We touched on a lot of things. We will be back next week with more during Doha. I have plenty more to talk about as well, I am sure. So thank you, Steve Tigner, Richard Pegaro, and Ed McGrogan. Thanks for listening to Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.